Okay. Continue our discussion. And by the way, this is our first call of our next cycle. We've done 256 of these calls over the years. This is a new cycle, and what we're going to be doing on this cycle, a couple of things. Those of you who have grants, we really need you as mentors, and we're going to look at fine-tuning your programs, bringing you news so you know what's going on in Washington, maybe look at some things in preparation of the next event. So to keep you in touch, and we really need and appreciate current grantees, perhaps our 2020 grantees, who will be re-upping. There's going to be a new RFA coming out probably in August. There's going to be a lot of people competing for that. There were 26 awards in 2020. 2021 grantees are just getting started, so they may benefit in starting their program and get some hints and tips as we go along. And people who may be interested in starting one of these programs, we're going to bring you through what EPA is looking for in their RFAs. And as we go through these, I think everyone can use helpful hints as we go. This cycle, we're going to focus on that RFA that'll be coming out and how to improve your program. But next year's RFA is going to be almost identical in the year after that. And we might pick up some hints, and some of our experienced grantees can give us some ideas as we go along on what we may want to do. But before we started recording and started this formally, I was talking about alumni. We call them alumni, and these are fantastic programs that run, and then they may take a breather for a lot of different reasons. It may be an internal issue. It may be someone leaving, and then the new person wants to get a re-grip on what's going on, or is on a learning curve and starting again. So we've got, I named to have six or so, there's many more, who have been past alumni. They come to our all-grantee meetings, they come to our PLCs, and then they decide it's time for us to pull the trigger and apply again. Now, problem with EPA is they're given a certain amount of funds, whether it's, it used to be $2 million, it might go to $6 million. They spend all the money, $200,000 on each. So if they got $6 million, they're going to give out 30 grants. If they got $3 million, 15 grants. So it's not necessarily the quality of your program. Unfortunately, it's probably the quality of your grant because they can't come out and visit everyone. They really can't say, oh, this is a great place. They've been doing this for years, and we need to refund them. They have to look at that grant, have what you've got in your grant, the way you've written it, and that grant takes a lot of time to write, and what's in the grant is all they know about you. So that's why we're focusing a lot on what they call for in RFAs. This is one of the few grant programs that, you know, academic grants, they give you the money and you do your research project or whatever. And this grant, it's a cooperative agreement. They really want all the deliverables spelled out ahead of time. They want, they really, once you've written your grant, you're on a, you've got a roadmap. Things do change, but you're on a roadmap pretty much in terms of performing your grant and expanding it as you go. But it is a detailed 30 pages and a cover letter, and you want to be very concise and use a lot of numbers. So we're gonna be talking about that, and we're gonna be talking about how, for those grantees who were just awarded or are 2020 grantees, we want to talk about how many you may be able to expand your partnerships and your community relationships to make a really good grant even better. So for all you out there, I think there's going to be something for everyone here. So this week we're going to be talking about community assessment. It's a good place to start. But before we go there, we do news from Washington. News from HMTRI and some of the things going on in the grant with the grantees. So, Steve, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. Thanks, Mike, and hello, everyone. I think somebody must have us on our speakerphone. But the latest from Washington, just wanted to reiterate the date, December 8th through 11th, 2021, is still on pace to be the Brownfields 2021 in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. So That's just a little more than 5 months away, so it's been rescheduled a couple times, but it's still on for December 8th or 11th, so stay tuned for more information on the National Brownfields Conference. From HM2RI, we got a couple of things underway. One, to help facilitate communications among grantees and with potential employers, we're in a process of revising and ultimately publishing an EWDJT grantee directory up on our website. The directory will provide contact information, curriculum, graduate certifications, training schedules, allowing national employers or others to who are searching for certified environmental workers to contact the local program directly. So the directory will also facilitate networking opportunities among grantees. So we're going to be sending out a scan in probably the next 10 days or so, requesting some additional information from you so we can get this directory up and running. Also, we've had some questions about some of the all grantee meeting materials, and we're still in the process of, we're actually processing the recordings from, we had 18 breakouts, 7 plenaries, and PowerPoint presentations. The PowerPoint presentations have been posted on the brownfieldstoolbox.org website, and we'll be getting the rest up there in the coming days, so stay tuned for that. We've had a lot of things to get up there, and so we're in the process of finishing that off. And one of the questions we get periodically is, will we be notified when the FY22 EWDJT requests for applications are issued? And we, HM2RI, will post the guidelines as soon as they are released. The EPA website, including several of the regional offices, will also post them to stakeholders. Shortly after the RFA is posted, EPA will announce a webinar discussing the guidelines for answering and clarifying questions related to the RFA. The due dates are for applications are usually 60 days from the date of the posting on grants.gov. So stay tuned for that, and as soon as we hear something, we will be letting folks know. As far as some of the other news, EWDJT news, congratulations to two FY21 grantees, plus a returning grantee from Regions 8 and 9. Region 10 did not have a funded program in this year's competition. However, they had 11 awards in 2020. Three of the ones we just wanted to mention were, one is Groundwork Denver, which is a program that's going to be targeting young adults ages 18 to 24 who reside, attend school or church or otherwise spend significant time in the city of Sheridan, Colorado. And they will be in Groundwork Denver plans to train and place students in environmental jobs. Another one, Kirk County Builders Exchange. They're going to be targeting residents who are unemployed, underemployed, low income, minority, or impacted by petroleum brownfields or waste facilities or contaminated sites and live in Kern, Ventura, Fresno, Kings, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Tulare counties. So it's called the Kern County Builders Exchange, and they plan to train 50 students and place at least 45 in environmental jobs. Lastly, Nye County has been awarded 4 EPA job training grantees beginning in 2008, and then again in 2012, 15, and now 2021. And they're one of the excellent alumni programs returning with new and expanded programming. They will be targeting young adults and successful graduates of Nye County's drug court program, veterans, unemployed, underemployed residents of the towns of Amargosa Valley, Beatty, Pahrumt, and Tonopah, as well as the Duckwater Shoshone Reservation. So all over, all told, Nye County plans to train between 64 and 68 students and place up to 56 in environmental jobs. So congratulations to the new grantees again. So, and oh, also Mike from Merrimack, Mike Sinew asked you your email address. I have it, and I was going through the directory just the other day and saw your name, and we've got it and the contact information matched with your organization. So I think we're good to go. So, Mike, back to you.
Great. You know, the nice thing about these PLC calls is we're grantees with EPA. It's a separate grant. And we've been doing it since the beginning of this program. But we're an off-the-record. We're a grantee. If you've got problems with EPA or questions and don't really want to identify with your program, you could bring them to us. Just return things. We send these notes out on Friday, and just if you got a question or comment or criticism, just return it with whatever you want to say or recommend this to someone else. So we're off the record, but part of the being that and not being connected with EPA are whatever you hear on this PLC is strictly us and the grantees and the contributions, and really has no impact on EPA policy or anything. We give our opinions and publish our schedules that are not EPA policy. They're not even official EPA, but it's our best guess of what's been happening in the past. So anyway, as we get into this new grant cycle, they'll be publishing guidelines, and they're going to have a webinar, and that webinar will be very good. It'll go through the RFA and what you need to do, but it won't. We're going to be going to the backstory of how do you address those RFA issues and talking about how can we score the most points on those. But we'll let you know certainly when the guidelines come out. When those guidelines come out, and we encourage and put in all the PLC notes, contact your regional coordinator now, even if you're thinking, and maybe even if you're thinking but not really going to submit a grant, just kind of kicking the tires, send an email to your regional coordinator, which will be in the notes. Tell them you're thinking about submitting a grant and you'd like to be put on their communications list for anything coming, and you may, depending on how you want to develop that relationship, they may be able to help you with your specific grant. Now, when the RFA guidelines come out, they can't do that anymore. They can have some general meetings of multiple people, like these PLCs, they may have some clarification meetings, but they can't talk about your specific grant or your community or say, oh, we got a brownfields there. You need to contact them, and I can give you their information. They can't do that once the RFA comes out. So you could ask them questions now, and that RFA, it could be July or August. If it's early, it'll be July. Later, it might be August. You can contact them and certainly get on their list, because they may have some resources that you may not be aware of that they can do that. Well, let's talk about specifically the RFA and about your target community, whether you're an old grantee, a new grantee. It's a good time to sharpen that pencil about your target group, and it's really the beginning of this whole thing. People might have a pretty good idea of the types of people they want to train. And one thing about these grants is it's a great big jigsaw puzzle. It's not linear. It's multivariable and more like a jigsaw puzzle. Everything fits together, and one thing impacts everything else. And this happens, and really the foundation of this is your target community, which includes the community that you're going to be working in and the types of people you're going to be training. If you go through our grantee lists and our directory, you'll see that, you know, most people will put down underserved, underemployed, but then the lists start to diverge. Some are focusing on returning citizens. Some are working on veterans. Some are working with the disabled veterans. Some are, their target primarily is women. Oregon tradeswomen, for example, are one of the few women in non-traditional trades, and they focus on women participants. It might be even an ethnic group, whether it's Spanish-speaking, Hispanic, or it might be some other group, Vietnamese. They may focus on Native Americans. Now, you don't have to focus on one group. You could do all of the above or some combination. So what you're going to want to do is, and again, as I said, this is kind of a puzzle. You're going to want to locate your target area and look at the population in that target area. Now, almost everyone in every target area has returning citizens. They certainly have unemployed, underemployed people. They certainly have women. If you have you may want to focus on you certainly don't want to restrict anyone. You want to have it as gender neutral as you can. May not be focused exclusively on women. But many of our grantees, such as Cypress Mandela, they may have half women. That's not that they don't even indicate that as their target group. They may have returning citizens. Women are part of that group, non-traditional trades, unemployed. So that part is easy. Now we get into the more difficult. And of course, when you start digging into this application, there's two things. The threshold, which we talked about in the last PLC, these are just the 6 or 7 check the boxes. Contractors often will do this. Do you do this? Have you done your done numbers? Have you got everything in place? Are you, are you registered with SAM? So are you under 200,000 or less? So they'll just check the boxes, and within 15 days of the application, you'll find out whether you're going to move on to the real meat of this program, which are the ranking criteria. In the threshold criteria, you do have to mention what your target group is going to be. So as I said, it's a jigsaw puzzle. You're going to want to get into your community. And because these grants are the way they are and the way the ranking criteria is, we kind of suggest a good way about it is develop these areas of knowledge and learn as much as you can so that when you put your grant writer together, we're sitting with him, or if you're writing the grant, you can draw from this knowledge for different ranking criteria. And this first one we're talking about today is community. And of course, they ask you in the RFA to talk about your community, and they have very specific questions, what the community need is, what are the economic challenges, are there brownfield sites there. But it goes much deeper than that. You want to find out, for example, there's two parts of this. There's an analytical part, which is easy, and then the more difficult part, which is getting out into the community and figuring out what community you need to get out into. So the easy part is an afterthought. Oh, you could do this anytime. It's the analytical part. You could go to Wikipedia. You could go to Google. You could go to your city offices of economic development, and you could get all kinds of numbers. You can get, you could find out the unemployment rate, whether it's a poverty zone. Those are more academic analytical exercises. You will do that, but after you find out and zeroed in on the neighborhood you're going to be working in. So first you got to find out, let's say we got this broad area, and I'm going to use maybe an urban area as an example, because it might be easier to describe. If you're in a very rural area, it may be easier. You've got a specific county. You've got a specific group that occupies that county, whether it's Native American or it might be an Appalachian region that's really poor, and you decide this is it. But how do you decide what that area should be? And I would like to say a good place to start, if you want to get one of these grants, is find out where everybody else is. This is a little counterintuitive, finding out where all the other grant money is going. Now, you can argue this both ways. You might say, well, I want to do something where nobody else is doing anything. But think about that for a second. The major component of this is getting partners. You've got to have partners. So to get partners, you got to find out who is working in the area you're going to be working in. For example, if you have Goodwill working with you, if you have a community center, you want your program to be where that community center is. You want that program to be where there are cleanups going on. You want your program to be where there are opportunity zones. And in the PLC notes, you could look all these where the opportunity zones are. You could find out where the county programs are. There's two programs I'm going to mention, My Backyard and EJ Screen, that shows you all the demographics, where the action is. But I think a very good place to find out where the action is in your broader community is get into city hall or county offices. Find out where is HHS working? Where is the Office of Economic Development working? The Department of Environment, whether they're brownfields or revitalization, whatever they call it. Get into the city or government offices and find out. Start calling around and find out if there's anyone working on economic development that you could talk to, and what neighborhoods are they focusing on and why. And that's where you're going to find your partners, because you're going to be able to partner with those other city activities, and you're going to be also able to partner with other nonprofits that are working in the same area, because obviously it's an area that needs help. They've done years of research. They know, believe me, City Hall knows where the problem areas are, and the nonprofits have migrated to that area to give help, where there is a VD clinics or where there is a other HHS programs, or whether there is an abundance of community centers. You want to start thinking, oh, okay, maybe we should look at this. Not only that, is a lot of these people have already done this demographic work. And in fact, the brownfields, if you've done a brownfields assessment and you're doing cleanup, you've already got to get all this data for them, for EPA. So they could share data with you. At the same time you're doing this, and we're going to talk about partnerships in another PLC, but you could also, talking about partnerships and say, you know, would you be interested in us doing a program like this in your community? And I can't imagine a community that's underserved, unemployed, high unemployment, degraded, that isn't going to welcome this program. So right off the bat, now we're still on, I'm still talking about figuring out your target area. You're doing a lot of the work that you're going to need for other ranking criteria. You're going to start getting a list of partners before you know it. And this is what I'm talking about. You're not just answering this very narrow question, let's throw a dart or let's pick a target area. You're actually gathering a body of knowledge that's going to help you when we talk about partnerships, because you'll already know who's working in the area, where the Goodwill is, where are the homeless shelters, for example, where is subsidized housing. That will get you a long way in determining your target area. Now, the next question I have is, you're located downtown, or you're located in a suburb, or you're located on the other side of the city. How are you going to pull this off? For example, to have your population come to you, that's wishful thinking. Unless you're located, and we have grantees that are located at the bus station, across the street from a bus station, okay? That's several of them. We have our program across from the bus station, and it's real easy to get here. If you're somewhere where no one could get to, think about what your retention rates are going to look like 6 months down when you've got this grant and you start, you know, build it and they will come. No, not our target groups need to be able to get to their training easy. You've got to have public transportation that's easy, or you have to go to where they are. If you've got Native Americans, you may need to go to the reservation, even though you don't have Native Americans in your program. You've got some or half, you may need to see if you could do training on the reservation. And we'll talk about this stuff in a little while. But I think you're going to have to be prepared to go where they're at, not for them to come to you. And again, this falls into this whole play. You've gone through the exercises. You know there's an opportunity zone between 21st and State. You know that there's a community center on State and Wacker, and you know there's some bus stations down there. But, gee, you're on the other side of town. Here's where you start, again, this weird overlaps with partnerships. You may have to talk to a community center and say, could we do our training in your center? It's not appropriate to do in ours because we want to be immersed in our target community. So you may want to go combination of fire stations for PPE, and they may be very willing to help you. Community centers are great. Churches, it works. Churches are embedded in their community, and they want this program as much as you want to put it there. So again, you need to try to make your deals and think about how this is going to look on your grant application. You've explained not only that you know the community, but you're bringing your program to the community. And think about the people who are evaluating a proposal and against others who may not be mentioning these things. You're going to get points. There's no question about it. So again, work where others are working. And I know that's a little, you could argue, have arguments against that, but in terms of looking at partnerships and facilities and bus routes and transportation and rates of retention, that all makes sense. Think about that. Those are all of the things that are going to play into this. And again, the reason we're mentioning it now at the very first PLC session is that this is going to inform you on everything else you do in the program. It's going to inform you on your curriculum. Once you have a community, say you're going to go, and if you look at the notes and look at our congratulations to new grantees in Region 8 and 9, you're going to see they have an ethnic group or a group, returning citizens or whatever, the general group, which they'll have many of from a mix of those people. But then they also mention a location, and they might say, this particular community, you know, this is where we're going to be training. And of course, when you're writing your grant and they want to understand that you know your community, you start mentioning community centers, churches, facilities that you may be partnering with the local fire department, or you may be law enforcement, may have a satellite station there that you'll be working with. These are things that are going to be points not only on this first threshold criteria, but on a lot of the others. So that's, and we're going to add more in the notes. When you get them, you could read them. Are there any questions? You know, now Janet's on the line. Now, Janet is one of those people that goes to their constituents, don't you, Janet? She's probably on hold. Janet Curley in Santa Fe works with Native Americans in away from her facility, and she goes to them. And she needs to go to them. And some she could do on site, but others she has to go to the facility. And there's many programs like that. OAI has their facility, their main facility downtown. They may do some classes downtown, but they also go out into the neighborhood. So countless others do the same. Anyone have any questions about looking at that target community? And how that fits into what you're doing now or what you may be thinking of doing as you tighten up your program? Okay. Well, I think it's the first step in this, and it's something we all need to think about, and so you don't get in a bind. The killers of this program are recruitment, which we'll be talking about, recruiting a class that doesn't work because you've underestimated, or you've just taken everyone who comes in, or they retention because they can't get to the class and it's just too hard for them. And this is all dependent on picking your target community. Anyone have any comments on that? Okay. Well, we try to keep these to 30 minutes, and we're going to be talking next time about this. We'll have the notes on Friday, and then on 2 weeks from now, which will be the 14th, we're going to be talking about labor market assessments. So these two assessments, and they occupy about 20 points. This is 10 points, target identifying your community, and then the other one will be 10 points looking at your labor market. And we haven't talked about it because we'll talk about it next week. That's another issue. Can your graduates get to their jobs? And that, as I said before, this kind of all fits in. There have been cases in some of our grants that there are companies that are, they really need the people, and they've found that they can go and pick multiple people up at the training center, and they could bring them to the job. That's how badly they need trained, certified people. So there's techniques and strategies around that. Well, if there's no other comments, you all have a great 4th of July weekend, and we'll give you a buzz in a couple of weeks. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, please reply to the note. Okay.
Would you do me a favor? Hello?
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, I think that my email is not in the group.
Okay, I need it. Yes, definitely.
Okay, the email that I received is from my my coworker, Eva Ortiz,
okay.
But my email is not part of the group, so.
Okay, let me give it to me now. That would be great.
Okay, is H as in Harry, U as in Unicorn, G as in Gate, O as in Oscar, P as in Peter, at ECHSYS.org.
Okay, let me repeat that. HUGOP at ECA. Is it SYS? I didn't know that was their.
Yes, yes. It was ECA saved before.
Oh, okay.
Like
they got a new one. Well, that's
yes.
Good to know because I have
yes.
They all changed. ECA SYS. S is in Sam. Y as Yolanda. S is in save. Is that it?
ECA. SYS like systems.
Oh, okay. ECASystems.org.
ECA. It's Hugo P at ECASYS.org.
Okay. Did everyone change your emails? We need to change ours, too, for you.
Yes, yes. Eva Ortiz also, who is the person that coordinating the
right.
information. Okay. Her email
okay.
is also EV8O at ECASYS.org.
Okay.
Okay.
Steve,
so,
are you still on the line?
Okay. I still need
we'll
to get on the email list as well when you're
oh,
finished
good.
With
okay.
this gentleman. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll hold.
We're ready. We're going to change all the CA things now so that it goes to the right place. Okay.
Yes. All right.
Okay. And the next person? Who am I speaking to?
This is Leanne Billing with the National Organization of Remediators and Mold Inspectors. And
okay.
Somebody else in my group forwarded me this link, so they're probably going to still remain receiving emails, but I'll be the person coming to the meetings. I'm the grant writer that's going to be
okay.
working on this. My email is leanne@normie.org. So it's L as in Larry. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
L-E-E-A-N-N.
Okay.
At Normie, National Organization, Remediators, Mold, Inspectors.
Wait, N-O-R? N-O-R? Or is it is it actually the word?
No. It's just the acronym, Normie. N-O-R-M-I.
Okay. At normie.org, or is it a...
Yep, .org.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that. L-E-E-A-N-N at N-O-R-M-I.org. And
yes.
Leanne, is that your first name, L-E-E-A-N-N?
Yes.
Is that how you spell it? And how do you spell your last name?
Billings. B as in boy, I-L-L.
Mm-hmm.
I-N-G-S.
Okay, great. Okay, I'll make sure you're on the list and you'll get the notes on Friday and you'll get invites before the next one, which is on the 14th.
Okay,
we'll
I appreciate that.
Go from there.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you so much. I'm very excited.
Great. We hope to get you on that on the program. There
yeah.
we go.
Okay, you guys take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.